Welcome to a new episode of Whiplash Agile, where we focus on the failures that are necessary to be successful on an agile journey, because there are always valuable lessons to be learned from someone else's struggles and stumbles. I'm Jeff Anderson, your host and CEO of Agile by Design. So, welcome everyone to our next episode of Whiplash Agile. Today we have with me Nada Bwendi. I hope I said that right.
Correct. Yes.
All right, I got it. Nada heads up Unleashing Your Awesome, with it, which is both your company as well as your process that you use. I think you coined it as leveraging your 15 plus years of technology, delivery, product management experience solely to help professionals, you know, fulfill their careers, unleash their inner awesome, find their sweet spot. I really like what you say often. I see a lot of your posts on LinkedIn and I read them. This idea of, you know, getting into their genius zone, maximizing. You talk about maximizing pay, but you don't talk about that too much. You talk a lot more about finding careers that people deserve, but they don't think they do, is kind of like how I'm framing it. So, you know, I wanted to also preframe this introduction that one of the reasons I brought you here is we share a bit of common history. Like, we both were kind of trying to do the, you know, the agile thing at a big C consulting firm and all the advantages and disadvantages that comes up with. And then I kept seeing your posts online, right? And I'd be having a day where I'm like, I'm not in the best mood, or I'm just kind of like, I have my bad days just as often or probably more often than anybody else. And I'd read what you're doing and the way you share that journey of what you're doing and then helping everybody else. I thought that's incredibly uplifting. And I'm hoping that anybody who's, you know, really into agile at scale and really into kind of like how to create progressive organizations, by bringing you on, it sort of helps provide an opportunity for people to listen and say, oh, this stuff is really a personal journey. And it really starts with one person and then how you approach things. And I love that that's what your focus has been. I just find it very refreshing, and you bring it with such positivity. So welcome aboard.
Thank you so much, Jeff. Wow, you did your homework, and it's so obvious that you've been reading most of my posts.
Well, they read themselves, I'd say. Like, they're pretty easy to go through. Why don't we go way back into the beginning?
Sure.
So, you know, early on in your career, you were an agile coach, you'd play a scrum master, product owner type roles. Was there anything in particular in the sort of the agile principles, agile body of knowledge that drew you to that kind of work in the first place? Like, what was the flame that drew the moth over there, so to speak?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when I started my career, I didn't know what agile was. I mean, the whole world around me was still early in the whole, you know, agile adoption, right? And so right out of school, I remember working at the same consulting company that you were part of. And
you can call it Deloitte. It's okay.
Okay. We can call it out. Deloitte. Yes. Actually, funny story, Jeff. I actually remember seeing, I think it was like the poker cards that you were part of, you know, building. That's probably my first exposure to that.
Green branded planning poker cards back in the day.
Yes, that's probably my first exposure. So we kind of knew each other without even meeting each other. And then I was on this, you know, large program. One of the big, you know, programs, I was based in Ottawa, and there were many pods. We were basically revamping a back-end, basically trading platform for medical practitioners. You know, I was hearing the word agile here and there. I still didn't know what it was. One of the big memories that is still in my mind was the senior manager on the program saying, don't ever say the word agile to the client, okay? It's going to scare them, because, you know, another, you know, organization or another consulting company, they used agile and they had a very bad experience. So let's just talk about the mindset. Let's talk about the benefits and how we're going to help them. And we're not going to use that word because it's going to scare them. And in my head, I'm like, why are they scared? Like, why did they have such a bad experience? And I think only later on in my career, as I started seeing implementations, agile implementations, the sort of boxed, you know, clients in, then I started understanding why it was sort of a word that might trigger people in some sense. But there was still a part of me. I was lucky. Like, I worked with mentors that, you know, did it very well. And I also worked around people who didn't do it well. And what I loved about it is the continuous feedback. I've always been the type of person who likes to test things out before even knowing what agile meant. I've always been a person who wants to delight customers and took pride in my work. And that's why I got into it, you know?
So one of the things you talk about is, let's go with some of the more challenging sides, is that you're in a kind of point in your career and your job where you felt like you're almost being gaslit a little bit or being undermined in terms of your capabilities. And that led you to sort of some self-actualization, some self-realization. I think that journey is really powerful and you share that journey a lot with others. So I'm wondering if you could share that a little bit now.
I think the most challenging part for me was being in a role that really aligned with who I was. And I had some vision idea of what I wanted to do, even as a little child, you know. One of my big dreams was to build products, learning products that would help people, that would help, you know, people with learning disabilities. So where that comes from is because as a child, I always struggled with learning. I never really did well in a traditional classroom where I'm just sitting there absorbing information. I would daydream and I would come home and reteach myself everything that was taught, like by reading the textbook, by going online on the internet. And I always did well with learning that is gamified. So that was my big dream, because as a child, I was made fun of because of the way, you know, I learned. I was, you know, told off in school, you know, and the teacher would tell my parents, hey, you know, she doesn't pay attention. Sometimes I'd be called, you know, oh, maybe she is underdeveloped. Maybe she's not intelligent enough. And so that was a big thing that hurt me, you know, as a young, you know, child. So I've always had that vision that one day I'm going to build digital products that would make people learn better. So going into university, I thought that the best path to get into that would be software engineering. I thought, okay, you know, if I get into software engineering, I'm going to be able to realize, you know, my vision. And back then, you know, there wasn't that separation of roles in software development. In order to build something, you had to be a coder, and the coder would gather the requirements, would run with the whole project. So at university, engineering was just not the right fit for me. For someone who has poor attention to detail, just the idea of sitting in front of a computer and coding and finding that little bug, that was just torture for me. So I dropped out of engineering school. That did not make my parents happy. I come from a Middle Eastern upbringing where you're either an engineer or a doctor. It really pissed my parents off. They almost disowned me. Yeah. So I was the disappointment for about a year. And then I switched to basically business school, but I went into a program called Management Information Systems. It wasn't heavy on the coding. It was more into the requirements gathering and all that good stuff. And then I got into Deloitte. But then really within the first year of going in there, I had this big dream, right? That, oh, you know, I'd be working on these cool projects. I'd be gathering requirements. I would be building products. And maybe this is my segue into fulfilling my dream of building my own product. But I was often put on projects that I wasn't really interested in, because that's the nature of consulting. And I understand it now as a business owner, right? Whatever, you know, clients they're able to get and whatever projects are available is what you get staffed.
The work
on.
Is the work. Yeah,
the work
exactly.
Is the work.
Yeah.
So it just frustrated me, and I felt that I had to basically force myself to enjoy these projects. I was good at what I did, but I didn't enjoy it. And I think what made me cope for so long is because of my upbringing and of me being an immigrant. When you're an immigrant, you're sort of like forced into adapting so many times that you forget the difference between you being good at something and you just having to do it, right? And it's like, okay, it's okay if I'm good at it. It doesn't matter if I enjoy it or not, because that's just the survival instinct kicking in. So I think it was just, it wasn't so much that the organizations were terrible or anything. It was more that I was just looking for what I wanted to do. And I was looking for the pathway to get me to fulfill my vision. And it just wasn't working. I was hopping from one consulting organization to another. That dream, that vision kept getting blurred even more and more and more as I started growing up and maturing. But I just, you know, felt so empty. I was so far down a path where I even forgot who I was. And so I think after the third consulting company. I was on a large agile program for a financial institution. And what triggered the whole thing, not a lot of people know this, the little detail of the story. They just know that I quit over text and I'm like, oh my God, that's crazy. Like, how did you do that? You're my hero. And maybe I want to do the same thing. Not that I'm endorsing that.
You don't endorse quitting over text. Okay.
I do not encourage that. But no, it wasn't a spontaneous decision, right? It was just built up frustration of not being able to do things the way I wanted to do them. And the little detail that sort of was the needle that broke the camel's back was I was away. My role was a scrum master on the project, and I was away for a day. I was trying to get my driver's license. You know, being in Toronto, you don't necessarily need a car. So I was a bit of a late bloomer getting my license. And I came back and I was sitting in a room waiting for my team to show up, and it was empty. I'm like, what the heck is going on? Like, why am I sitting here in the room? This is our daily scrum time. And then one of the business analysts walked into the room and said, didn't you get the memo? I said, what memo? All of your meetings got rescheduled. I'm like, what? What the heck? So then I saw basically my team, my whole development team, in another room with the program manager, and they were just being pulled in multiple directions. And I just got so frustrated and fed up, because at that point, you know, I was dealing with developers who were burnt out. I was trying so hard to protect them. And to have someone just show me that amount
of rug out from under you when you're not, yeah.
And not even let me know, as someone who is a scrum master on the team, I just got so fed up. You know, I just felt so disrespected. And I felt bad too, because I just felt like, in a way, like, I can't protect my team anymore. And what's the point of me being there? So I remember just, you know, sending a text to my boss and just saying, hey man, I quit. I'm done.
What was the reaction?
And he was like, the text was like, and I still have the text. He's like, what? Question mark, question mark. Are you serious? And I'm like, and part of me wasn't even like thinking it through. And part of me was scared even saying that, because I had nothing lined up. That was the first time in my career where I ever leave a place where I had nothing lined up. Usually, like, I'll get a job before leaving a job. And I just was like, yeah, man. I'm just so tired of being disrespected. I can't do this anymore. So he had to wrap up a meeting and we chatted, and he asked me, is this really it for you? I said, yeah, you know, and he was honest with me. He's like, I don't think it's ever going to change. And I said, then I can't do this. I can't be part of this anymore. And so that's what triggered everything. And for, I will say, close to a couple of years, while I was figuring things out, I was taking a ton of contracts. I took probably, I would say, two contracts after that happened, just to give me some leeway. You know, I did a Scrum Master contract. I did an Agile Coach contract. And I also did another Agile Coach contract. And throughout those 2 years, I was probably interviewing for maybe 20 companies at that point. And it was just rejection after rejection.
Really? Okay.
And so I tried, you know, revamping my resume. I hired multiple coaches and nothing, no difference. So I remember finding a coach in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I was hesitant about engaging her because all of the coaches that I worked with didn't even know the word agile. So it was hard for them to even understand what I did, let alone help me figure out what my next step is in my career. So she had worked, you know, with people in tech. She was in a VP of HR for so long, and she started her own practice as a career coach. She asked me a powerful question that none of the coaches asked me, which was, do you even want to keep doing this? I'm like, oh no. Oh crap, someone actually put the mirror in front of me.
Yeah. How'd you answer that?
I said, gosh, you got me. I don't, but I don't know what else to do. Because all I knew at that point for 15 years is tech and agile and product.
A master and product owner and coach and all that kind of good stuff, right?
UX, you know, I realized, what am I doing? Like, I'm working for financial institutions and I'm working for large organizations where I can't make the social impact that I want to make. There's nothing wrong with these organizations. It's just that I forgot that dream that I've always had. And I tried to convince myself that that dream didn't matter, but I realized more and more that it did. And that there was more to life than just pretending that you like your job just so that you can pay your bills and just so that you can make a six figure. And at some point, I was even like, I had just purchased my condo. I had all these responsibilities, but I was even saying like, I'd rather sell everything and have nothing than feel this way. And when I had that feeling, that's when I knew, you know, I had to do something completely different. Something that I didn't share was growing up between 9 years old to 18, I helped my mom grow her business. So my mom was a career transitioner too. She was in the financial services industry. She worked with bankers. She was a trainer. And she left her job around the time my sister was born. So I was 9 when she did that. And I witnessed her going through a career transition, and I saw the emotional roller coaster that she went through from being an executive at a large bank, going on business trips, being all dressed up to being around kids, you know, throwing up on her and, you know, dressing it down. And I'm like, hey, my mom survived and she's happier. She has her own business. It was fun helping her grow her business. Even as a child at 9, you know, I was able to be part of it. I was designing the flyers for her. I was distributing them with her. I ran a classroom in a summer camp with her at the age of 16. So that also aligned with the whole thing of being a teacher and developing, you know, an e-learning, you know, product. So when I quit over text and then did all these contracts and realized that I wasn't getting it anywhere, and that coach asked me that question, I figured, you know, it's time I figure this out.
Yeah.
So she asked me, I mean, we did all these exercises and I got nothing. I got nothing for 2 months. We were trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I think at the very end, we landed on employee experience. I felt that it was close to what I was doing as an agile coach and sort of aligned to why I wanted to even be an agile coach, to improve the experience of employees.
Sometimes I think we need to take the word agile completely out of the equation.
I just wanted to take the word agile completely. You're right, because I felt like it was sort of, for some reason, it just clouds the whole purpose of it. For some reason, I don't know why.
It's because methodology-oriented people be doing methodology-oriented things. And that's kind of just what a lot of people in the space tend to gravitate towards versus the customer experience, the new ways of working, the teamwork, all that kind of good stuff. So it's the word is loaded with lots of baggage. So
it is. And, you know, now I get it. Now I get why. You know, we were being told on that program at Deloitte not to use that word, because that what was going on. That's what I experienced my entire career. And it drove me to insanity, to the point where I quit. And it was such a sad thing, because there are so many beautiful things about Agile that I wish, you know, people understood back then, and that I wished I was able to help my clients understand. But having said that, you know, yeah, I was initially going to get into employee experience, but I got scared because, first of all, the idea of interviewing again, oh my God.
Yeah. No.
And truthfully, towards the very end, I interviewed for a newer consulting company that was based, I think their headquarters is based in Australia, and they were opening an office in Toronto. And I was about to have my interview with the managing director. I would have gotten a role that was probably the role that I always dreamed of in my career, quite senior, being part of an office that's starting, you know, in Toronto. And the recruiter loved me. Everything was great. At that point, that's when I decided actually to get into career coaching. I felt like it was the lowest hanging fruit, you know, funny enough. A lot of people ask me, well, how do you figure out what your ideal job or your career sweet spot? How did you even figure out that this is something you love? Truthfully, I didn't know that it was something I loved. I just got into it again because it was the lowest hanging fruit. I felt it would be a pathway to be able to do the greatest thing that I want to do. I figured, okay, well, maybe if I get into career coaching, I'm going to be able to build digital products that would help people learn. And what am I teaching them? How to grow in their career, right? So that was at the back of my head. I've always been a visionary. That's one of my gifts. I can see sort of my future. I can see things, but I'm not very great at actually doing all the process oriented things and the nitty gritty.
This sounds like a familiar problem. You might have some things in common.
Yeah. So, yes.
I think there's a commonality in people that get drawn to this space, which is good visionary, good conceptualization, pattern recognition. And then sometimes the specificity, like it can be there, but I'm actually going under diagnosis for ATDD. I called it accepted test-driven development when I should have called it attention deficit disorder. Whoops. I think there's a common, it's similar, right? You're only attracted to one because you have the other, right? So anyway, you're describing some similar kind of symptoms, I think. So
yeah, I think that is a common denominator for a lot of founders, right? Is we have these big dreams and big ideas, but we need a team. We really do to help us, you know, actualize them. So yeah, you know, I got into career coaching and I never thought that it was going to be a full-time thing, to be quite frank. Because like I said, it was a pathway to something, right? And when I went through that interview with that consulting company to get again into an agile role, I remember the recruiter was describing to me the interview process. And she said, okay, you're going to have this interview and then that interview. And it's like five other rounds of interviews. And then she just shared with me the interview that is practically my biggest nightmare style of interviews. You know, those interviews where they ask you how many tennis balls you can fit in a bus. And as soon as she said that, like that just triggered something within me because
I don't think I've ever been asked that question. How many tennis balls can you fit in a bus?
Like, you know, I don't know. I lucked out. I don't know. Maybe it's the Ottawa office because that's where I started my career at Deloitte. We didn't have to do the presentations or the case, you know, interviews to get in. And we weren't asked any of these questions, those logic questions. But yeah, that clashes, that triggers my whole learning disability thing where I'm asked, oh, you know, really, that measures my intelligence? If I can tell you how many tennis balls I can fit in a bus, like that's how you're
my response to that is kind of like, can you ask me something practical, please? Because I'm just not getting why I'm even being asked this question in the first place. But yeah, that's just me, you know.
So I'm telling you, that is what got me. I thank her for saying this to me because that pretty much like right after that conversation, I was like nodding my head. Okay, cool. Yeah, we'll schedule the next interview. Like freaking out inside.
Yeah, you're like, what the hell?
And then right after I send a note to my mentor after, you know, it was like my graduation day for the career coaching certification. And she was just having this conversation with me, like, you have one foot in, one foot out. Like, you got to decide, how are you going to brand yourself? And I'm like, oh, I don't want to brand myself too much into the whole career coaching because I still want to get those contracts. And then she goes, you got to make a decision, right? But fine. If you're not ready, cool. You know, you're just going to have to figure out a way to like do both. And after that experience of how many tennis balls you're going to fit in a bus, I was like, okay.
Let's do this. 1,000%. Well, at least they didn't ask you how many story points it was to fit in a bus. Like that could have been even worse, right?
Oh my God.
It's the velocity of the bus filling. You'd be like, oh, here we go, right? It's the new, you know, job interview 2.0 with agile in it, right? It's got points and sprints and stuff.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Don't even get me started. But yeah, that's the insider story that I'm sharing.
Amazing.
Yeah.
You talk a lot about, maybe I'm not using the right words, but you talk a lot about self-actualization, people getting over imposter syndrome. If people are listening right now, and there's one piece of advice you could give to people, you know, without opening up the whole kimono, what would you say to listeners who are suffering from imposter syndrome, who don't feel happy in their careers? It's just like, what's the one gotcha for them you think that could help get them motivated? Or what's the one piece of advice you would give them?
This is hilarious because I was just watching something last night. It was a video on how to start on YouTube. And the person said, the best way to be successful is to do this. Suck, suck, suck.
Yeah. Yeah.
And success. So that's something that I say to people. Hey, oh, I'm scared of, you know, doing this and I'm scared of doing that and I'm scared of trying this. And I get it. I'm empathetic because I was there too. And I share with people when I started out as a career coach, I didn't know everything. I never had the title. I you know, just had a career coaching certification. Big deal. Everyone can get a certification. And maybe I didn't know as much as I know now, but this is where the true agility comes in, right? Do it scared and suck at it at first, because that's the only way you're going to learn. And then iterate on being better and better and better until you become successful. And I'll tell you something, even now, I don't consider myself.
Who's listening? That was in quotes. That's successful. So.
Yeah, quote unquote, successful, right? Yeah. And I'll tell you something. People who are high achievers, truthfully, you're never going to consider yourself successful. Maybe if you compare where you're at right now to where you were a year ago, that's when you're going to realize that you're more successful. But most people I talk to, the type of clients that I love working with who have a similar personality as us, they're never happy with where they are right now. And that is a good thing, because if you are completely happy with where you're at right now, you're never going to grow. So that feeling of fear is a good feeling. It's a great thermometer to know that whatever you're getting into is challenging enough for you. And so that is my biggest advice.
Get over your fear. Any advice on how to do that for anybody who's like, oh, not as saying, get over my fear. I can't do that. There's no way.
Good God. Yeah. Simon Sinek says, start with your why.
Yeah.
I disagree with that saying.
Which I like. I love some contrary views. I'm like, tell me more.
Here's the thing.
This is good.
I kind of knew my why, but I couldn't hear it clearly because I was terrified. And until I realized what my fears were, that's when my why became clearer. And so when you hear that saying, start with your why, like a lot of people don't even know what their why is, or they may have forgotten it, or they're too terrified to listen to it.
Yeah. Yeah. They're too scared of something that's getting in the way for them to understand what their purpose is, right? Yeah, absolutely.
So my advice is to figure out why you're scared. Start there first. And how you can start figuring that out is obviously you work with a professional, whether it's a therapist, someone who helps, someone you can talk this through, right? And that's an exercise that I do with my clients. I came up with this exercise after working with probably within the first year of working with maybe 50 people. I'm like, why are these people like, why are they struggling so hard with not knowing what they want to do? I mean, I remember working with a PhD. He did all kinds of different jobs. And as we worked together, he just could not decide for the life of him what he wanted to do next. And it's not that he wasn't intelligent. I mean, this guy, like anyone who completes a PhD, I mean, come on, they go through so much to be able to achieve that. And I realized there was a lot of underlying fears. He shared with me stories about how he got rejected, how he got disciplined, you know, in the world of academia. And as we untangled those fears, I realized, he realized as well, why he's not pursuing the next step. You know, a lot of, you know, clients that I worked with, they went through toxic situations. A boss may have said to them that they weren't good enough. And that's what was blocking them. I know for myself, at one point towards the end, I had a boss who basically said to me that I'm a terrible coach. And so that sort of put a barrier.
I don't think he knows. I don't think that boss knows what coaching is if that's his management style.
Exactly. And so when he said that to me, obviously I got triggered. Obviously I bottled that up. And that is also part of the reason why when I was working with my mentor, Kara, in terms of figuring out what my next step is, we couldn't figure it out for 2 months because I was telling myself the story of, well, okay, I can't be a career coach or I can't, you know, be in an environment where I'm teaching people anything because I'm a terrible coach.
Right.
And until I was able to share that openly and realize how silly that was, I could not figure out what I wanted to do next. And when I was able to say it out loud, then I realized, gosh, I actually love coaching. That is the reason why I got into agile coaching. I love teaching people.
It was the coaching piece. Yeah, that was
really powerful. I love asking questions. I love helping people realize things about themselves and what they want to do. And yes, I can be a great coach. That's what I thought at the time. And so if you want to overcome imposter syndrome, you got to figure out what's blocking you mentally. That's the first step.
Who's the kind of person that comes to you for help, if there's such a thing? Like, what are their common desires, fears? Like, describe some of the people that, and like, you know.
That's a funny question that you asked that, because I was just building. See, there's so many like things in me as a founder that come from my background that I just love doing just for the sake of it. But I've probably built multiple landing pages in addition to my website. I think that itch of software development is still in me. And because I'm not on, you know, big projects where I'm helping large clients build things, I do it for the sake of doing it sometimes in my own business.
Now you enjoy it.
But here's the thing. Why I'm saying this is a lot of the clients that I work with are jack of all trades. I think that's why a lot of them struggle with committing to a certain path, because they're good at so many things, so many things. And maybe they are commitment phobes like me, where they're like, oh my God, I'm going to have to commit to this and I'm going to have to box myself into this path and I'm going to miss out on all these shiny things that I could do, right? So a lot of the clients who come to me are that way. And notice how I'm not particularly saying tech or non-tech, because I work with a variety of clients. And I realized that a lot of the clients that I work with, at least every single client that I've worked with, there's a commonality between me and them, right? And I think that's what you want to look for in a coach, is look for someone who struggled with what you've struggled with and who has a similar journey in some way, because you want someone who understands you. And I get that a coach is different than a mentor, because a mentor, obviously, you know, they'll teach you from their experience, and a coach will align to where you're at. And they worked with a variety of people and understand the multiple paths that are possible. But I still believe that when you find someone who can relate to what you've been through, it just creates a stronger bond. So jack of all trades, some of my clients have gone through childhood trauma, similar to kind of what I've been through, where they've either been told that, you know, they were not good enough by a parent or someone, you know, in their inner circle. People who I would say maybe haven't gotten their break yet, because they haven't been discovered by the right organizations. And they're so gifted at what they do, but maybe they're not able to voice it clearly. I tell people that you can have a lot of great strengths, but there is a superpower that's the most dominant. And so you need to be able to figure out what that is. You know, some people call it your value proposition, right?
I like superpower. Superpowers is good.
Superpower is very like relatable to a lot of people. And so you need to be able to clearly articulate it. Because if you just talk about all the great things or the amazing things that you're strong in, they're just going to compete with each other. But when you're able to tell your story in a way that helps people see your superpower, then you're going to stand out. And so a lot of the people that come to me are already amazing at what they do. The two things that are blocking them is figuring out what they should focus on, what their superpower is, and knowing how to tell their story to showcases. Because there's a difference between bragging about what your superpower is and telling a story that helps people realize what it is.
Well, yeah, I always love the storytelling approach, because if you tell a good story and you happen to be one of the protagonists in the story, that's not showing off. That's just, hey, here's what happened. You can actually undersell yourself with a good story like that, and then people go, oh, that was an amazing story. You don't need to brag. So yeah, that's great advice. There's actually a lot of management through storytelling kind of advice that you see out there. So I feel like it's almost some of the advice, a lot of the advice that you're giving is the advice that a good agile coach would give to a team or give to their managers or their team leads, but you're doing it on a very interpersonal level to help them kind of increase their mindfulness, their presence, their storytelling, overcoming their fear. Very microfied it. I think it's made up a word, but you personalize it down to a very individual level, which is amazing. If you wanted to leave behind something for anybody that's listening where they could reach out and find out more about you, what's the best ways to do that?
The best way to do that, I would say, is to start with my website, natabuhendi.com. There are a lot of things that people can go through. One of them is my story in more detail in the About section. It's also on the homepage. And then there is my podcast. So at the top, there is a link to access my podcast. I launched my podcast the beginning of last year in February 2023, and it has already gotten more than 3,000 downloads in a span of 8 months. Thank you. Funny enough, I have a dedicated episode on what's holding you back in your career, and I have a dedicated episode on finding your career sweet spot. It literally mirrors. It's almost like you're in my program when you go through it. I've actually had like a few people who said to me that all they did was listen to my podcast and they landed a job. And it was a career transition. Like I had a lawyer who went through like no tech experience, went through my podcast and she said, I was able to land a product owner role. I'm like, holy crap. Just listening to your podcast. So that warms my heart. It's my little baby project.
Some people are so afraid of sharing their knowledge because they feel like it's going to compete with, but it doesn't. It really just elevates it, right?
Absolutely.
Like, yeah, it's
and I have a little framework. It's called the, I call it the influencer pyramid. And at the very, it builds upon the idea of, you know, knowing what your superpower is and understanding how you can use that superpower to help, you know, people solve problems. But at the very top of the pyramid, I talk about reciprocating. And the thing is, when you come across, and I say this, whether it's in an interview, whether it's on the job, you know, as a leader, when you're, you know, giving so much to people in a way where you don't have that many expectations, it's inevitable that people are going to want to reciprocate. And so sometimes people come to me and say, oh my God, I'm going to go into this interview and I'm going to give them my intellectual property. I'm just like,
it's not property. I think even the word is wrong sometimes. Like I can't think of a method, framework, architectural approach, whatever, you name it, that I've come up with that I didn't want to share with as many people as I possibly could, free as I could, because it's never hurt. It's always helped immensely. Like someone will reach out to me and say, hey, I used your lean change approach thingamabob over in halfway around the planet, and it always plays forward, right? Like, I don't think I'd have a business if I wasn't doing that. So that's good advice to give to people. Your IT, unless your IP is some crazy pharmaceutical, rocket science, whatever, like just give it away, everybody. It's not worth anything if no one's using it.
You've got to give people a reason to hire you, and people are not going to, the information alone is not going to help people become successful, because people will need you, your uniqueness, your behavior, your mannerisms. What makes you is what's needed to make these projects successful, right? I mean, we know this as agile coaches. It's not about the scrum guide or the books that's going to make the client successful. It's about the people who are the Jedis at managing those behaviors and conversations. If you have someone who has poor mannerisms applying, you know, what's on the textbook, projects are not going to be successful. So
yeah, they're not going to be successful. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Otherwise ChatGPT would just get hired.
I feel like ChatGPT is going to replace a whole kind of brand, a certain frame of consulting and workers out there. And it's good. Okay, everybody, stop looking at the textbook. I've got the textbook right here.
Yeah, exactly. So, now let's just have a conversation.
That's amazing. Nada, thanks so much for being part of the podcast. It was really great having you here.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Jeff, for this opportunity. It was a lot of fun.
You're more than welcome. And I'm going to take you up on your offer and I'll get on your LinkedIn. It was a LinkedIn weekly, I think you said. You have...
So it's kind of similar to you, except that how I do mine is I actually do it live because I am just an adventurer.
More fun.
So no editing, Jeff.
I like that. It's kind of like it's kind of funny. I've done a fair amount of public speaking. I get nervous before each one. And then I'm just like, just used to being nervous now. So someone will be like, Jeff, we're going to speak to X number of thousand people. Aren't you nervous? I'm nervous. I'm like, yeah, I'm nervous. You don't look nervous. I'm like, yeah, I'm nervous on the inside. I'm used to it. So it's all good.
Yeah. You know, the thing that I love when it's live versus recorded is that people get to interact in the chat and ask questions. I just did one recently with an engineering leader. He was an ex Spotify, also based in Toronto. He works at a company called Homebase. It was a lot of fun. We talked about how to stop underestimating yourself, and people in the chat were just participating like crazy. They were asking a lot of great questions, you know, ranging from how do hiring managers make a decision, or how do you deal with a difficult, you know, boss? It was awesome. Really great.
Love it. I look forward to getting on that. Hopefully, you know, it won't be like, sometimes I go on these things and you're like, questions? questions.
Well, we managed to hold a conversation over 30 minutes, which is the allocated time. So I have no doubt that we're going to have a great conversation.
Awesome. Thanks again for being part of the podcast. Really appreciate having you. Thanks again for joining me on Whiplash Agile. Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss a single episode. If you want to connect with me, join me on LinkedIn or Twitter/X. And if you like what you hear, or especially if you don't like what you hear, get in touch with me directly at agilebydesign.com.